grounds are my superior Thursday pronunciation. Traditional greeting upon arrival in the land of the Philippines. But it is not there that I am at the moment, but upon the island of Bali, sitting back in a little bungalow on the rim of a volcanic crater. Stretched out below me for about 6-8 kilometers to the other side of the crater lies a lake and a little mini volcano which rises up to the same level of 1700 meters. Above sea level as the rim itself. Most of this place is enveloped in a layer of cloud which makes viewing quite next to impossible. It is occasionally clear, rendering wonderful views. But that is not the purpose or objective of this little tape, but rather to catch up all my experiences and exploits in the land of the Philippines, where I spent close on a month. I could have spent longer there, but that's a very, very long story. This tape has been heavily censored in many parts because of the nature of the exploits, and consequently it's sort of more like a very blonde, very bland, very bland account. Bland as the food of much of the Philippines is, in fact. However, to return to my diary, it's Tuesday, 15th of February. How time flies. Air travel itself, you may find, is very quick in that the distance covered is quite considerable for the time taken. But the time taken to get to and from the airport, the time waiting, can make that speed equation so false. The incoming flight was delayed a bit, the outgoing flight by a bit more, and the airport was teeming with zero entertainment. Returning to the transit lounge of Bandar Seri Begawan, the capital of Brunei, from which I had been bounced earlier, with its midday prayers being broadcast over the PA system, probably in retaliation for the poor turnout in the prayer room in Sihanoukville Road. The tiled, scratchless floors seem maintained with a loving care uncommon to most airports, and certainly to most floors. And then we're off again on the second leg towards Manila. Now each country has its own particular charm and peculiarity. In the Philippines, to judge by its airport, has more than its fair share. The airport itself, large, but not busy with aircraft. Maybe it was due to the fact that we were late, a slack time. But it was busy, with lots of people walking to and fro, like a shift change time. The internal layout, the arrival, was poor and without any sense of order. The charge for the trolley. It includes a very evasive porter service. I certainly did not see any porters rushing around willing to take my trolley. And then, as you clear all the attendant paperwork, customs and that, and exit into the arrivals hall, there's a line of girls there waiting to try and ensure that your baggage tag, as attached to your baggage, agrees with the tag on your ticket. Never before has this wonderful bit of bureaucracy been seen. But somehow, I think that if there was about 40 people leaving at the same time, then these 2 or 7 or 8 girls would not definitely be able to handle it. A useless bit of paperwork bureaucracy. Anyway, ripped off with the taxi service to get from the airport into town, something about which I've been warned about, which, despite warning, I seem to have to experience. It was a safe trip, of course. I mean, I was paying for it. In contrast, the return trip cost me somewhere in the region of 5-10% of my entry trip. Anyway, cannot help it. I think climbing Mount Kinabalu was in fact less tiring than this day, because it took until some nearly 10 hours of transit, waiting, walking, waiting, 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 walking, flying. Deposited in town soon after there, and there were 2 particular and early impressions. Firstly, it's the smiling faces, faces. Is it faces? Yeah, was it faces? Smiling faces, yes. Clear complexions and relaxed nature of everybody. It is fair to say that it seems very difficult to get angry with anybody, even if you can conjure up a reason. The second relates to the unofficial symbol of national pride, the jeepney, an elongated wheelbase formerly derived from the jeep after the Second World War, with two rows of seats, one down each side, a great capacity for devouring passengers. The vehicle itself of fantastic colours, with a multitude of chrome finishings, a stallion on the front, or maybe a whole herd of stallions on the front and the bonnet. The standard of driving seems improved because of the care bestowed upon these vehicles. The general standard of driving is without any sense of order. The left lane is separated from the right lane by a very firm embankment. But anyway, Ermita, the suburb where I was staying, has been transformed from a sin centre in Manila, with many boarded up shops appearing, one or two even appearing during my stay. Seems that the mayor is trying to crack down. But the reality is perhaps that the businesses are just being forced out to the various suburbs. Anyway, it does take away from all the traditional fun of the suburb of Ermita. Two parallel streets running for about a kilometre each. A Bean Street, an M.H. Del Pilar Street, just in case. Anyway, I was there. Very quiet time there. The history of many of the older buildings is linked to the natural occurrences and natural disasters. The cathedral in Intramuros, the old fortified area dating from Spanish times, is drab in appearance, and on its sixth complete rebuild, plus few partial rebuilds, because of fire, they still have an appalling fire safety standards in this part of the world, the Philippines, typhoons, earthquakes, and the occasional war. The Second World War actually resulted in most of the Europe being flattened altogether. Taking in several of the museums, including the cultural center, there is little to entertain, captivate the passing tourist. An art show of note was the one reflecting the experiences of some of the nearly 500,000 Filipinos who work abroad. Most of the displays reflect on happiness, particularly the impact of prostitution and drugs. Draws into comparison on a different level the experiences of the Chinese in Sabah, where 3 out of every 10 immigrants died. But then the vices of the 19th century and the natural vices of the jungle of Sabah probably been slightly different to the vices of the First World War. Friday, a day trip to the island of Corregidor. Yeah, I struggled with that word. An island of strategic, military strategic importance which sits at the entrance of the bay. Its use today is far more peaceful in orientation, but it still carries the reminders of World War II. The tunnel, or long tunnel, which included the 1,000-bed hospital, have been converted to a more peaceful, information-providing function. Yes, that was a wrong one. With recreated noises and smoke, as the island withstood first a Japanese attack, and subsequently an American attack towards the end of the war. But it is the old shelled barrack rooms, still lying in ruins, that are the most interesting and represent the most telling evidence of the futility of war. Only nature has won back, and the twisted branches around the walls and reinforcing bars, attempting to reclaim peaceably what was lost over 40 years ago. Nighttime would probably tell a very eerie story about this part, this island. So, onwards we go. Long enough in Manila, with my visa extended suitably, headed north towards Angeles. It's spelled to look like Angeles, but it is pronounced Angeles. The town adjoining the former Clark Air Force Base, abandoned in 1991, in the face of the natural onslaught of Mount Pinatubo, which is in fact still erupting, and still quite dangerous. But it is not Ararat. Ararat, yeah, that was a good one. A-R-A-R-Y-A-T, not Ararat. Which is more imposing in this otherwise flat, undulating landscape. Despite the heat haze, it stands bold and imposing, denying its near 1,050 meter odd height. Now, Mount Pinatubo is a different level of fish. It is completely inconspicuous by all standards, sitting in amongst a range of similar-sized hills. How odd that something so small can yield such unnatural, or is it such natural, power? The Air Force may have gone, along with its 20,000 personnel. On exercise time, they had some 50,000 based at this Air Force base. Yeah, I suppose we're based there. Leaving behind large concrete landing strips, partly used by the Angeles Hot Rod Association and partly secured by the Philippine Army. The base itself measures some 70 kilometers by 40. And was, for many years, the lifeblood of this town of Angeles. Okay, where are we now? Oh yeah, off MacArthur, yeah, that wasn't censorship. Off the MacArthur Highway, the main dusty strip. Off the MacArthur Highway, the main dusty, probably volcanic dust strip, runs Field Street, now reduced to some 700 meters of active night stops, which rev into action at sunset. Under a portfolio of names, Ziggy's, Cinderella's Palace. There's even an Irish place as well, but anyway, we'll skip that one. Here, the language is slightly different to the conventional English of Filipino. Rather, it is of bar finds and mama songs, go-go girls, dance girls, so on. A most pleasant and interesting place to spend a few days. Anyway, too easy and too pleasant to stay. This is the next day. This is the next entry. It is a wonderful place. Did I really write this? I did, yes. Was it? What else could? I walk through the streets to say my last silent farewell to the dusty bus station with a multitude of miniature cafes, none capable of holding more than 10 to 12 people. The buses are good, but without the Malaysian videos and the journey through flatlands, wide, dusty, dry riverbeds, rice fields everywhere. The rice does not seem to have as much taste in this part of the world as it did in Indonesia. That's probably why the Japanese are getting upset about the American rice at this point in time. There's a lot more to this rice business than meets the eye, or the hits the taste buds. The final hour of the 4-hour journey. It's only 4 hours. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, we climb and climb. The view, great. But it was actually sort of hidden by the haze, the heat haze. It was a hot day. The road still recovering from the 1990 earthquake. Common feature of most travel in the island of Luzon. With much evidence of where the road has been wiped out. Arriving in the town of Baguio. A hillside town, colder than the lowlands to the south, and the entrance to the mountain region. The temperature was decidedly chillier, and most people here seem to wear big pullovers. Fortunately, big pullovers do not fit in rucksacks, but anyway, a multitude of layers of clothing were thereby engaged. The evening entertainment is certainly less sophisticated than what I have been experiencing up till now, but still a quite common feature, not only for the benefit of tourists, but also for the benefit of male travellers in this part of the world, is that little quiet were a few words in your ear. Would you like a girl to talk to? Hospitality girls, of course. Yeah. Talk to? Well, there goes a degree in philosophy. Anyway, Baguio has little to offer, other than many folk clubs of varying quality. Various hills to walk up and down with. A hotel, in fact. Picture this. that was moved down part of a hill during the earthquake now sits at a 45 degree angle on the slope. It looks about as if it's to topple over down into the valley below. Anyway, it's no longer in use at this stage. It looks peculiar, but anyway, what is in fact the most peculiar thing about it is that the building is completely intact, other than the half the windows are gone. Baguio, yes, it's also home to what? It's also home to what? The Bell Church sect. My handwriting is definitely deteriorated beyond belief, which combines a mixture of Taoism, Buddhism, Confucianism, and Christianity. If any religion is certain to be accused of hedging its bets, it is this religion. It probably draws converts at the last minute from hedging of Gnostics. The town as a whole is shabby in appearance, not dirty as such. Its market seems strewn with amongst the many hillsides. The only building of any clean appearance is the cathedral of the highest hill overlooking the town, with two clocks, both stuck at different times, a legacy of various aftershocks, no doubt. An early morning departure in the comparatively crispy air in a bus that has all the appearances of homemade, do-it-yourself construction. A steel shell into which was fitted a selection of wood panellings, crudely hewn. The gathered selection of fellow travellers this day were equally varied, with an appalling array of dental fatigue visible. At least Sumatra had prepared me for the endless ascending, descending journey that day. But certainly nothing could have prepared me for the wonderful views from that slow-moving platform. The road, generally wide enough for only one vehicle, roughly engraved into a steep cliff face, which bore the trademarks of frequent landslides. One easily gets to understand how towns can be isolated for many weeks or even months after an earthquake in this part of the world. I wondered unnecessarily, pessimistically, whether we would follow up one of the paths of these landslides into the deep valleys. The view around each bend grew wilder and fiercer as the day laboriously progressed, and then ceaseless series of jolts, lumps, humps, and bumps. How to get out, sentencing. The road mysteriously wound its way around those long, winding, spaghetti-like mountains. Suddenly, we were in the village of Sagada, a picture postcard type of village, with its motley collection of accommodation, or functional, but certainly not aesthetic appeal. Chickens run wild on the street, pigs tethered at the roadside. But then there was at least one satellite dish visible, an oddity of technology. On the morning leaving Sagada, sometime around the 5, we were able to watch ice skating from some European center. This technology can certainly upset traditional values. And then, of course, the place has a curfew. In the late 70s, Marcus introduced a curfew as part of his martial law, in order to try and exercise some more control over this part of the world. Switch this thing off. They kept this curfew. So from 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock, nothing's going to happen. Which really cuts down the entertainment opportunities. But anyway, you make good in a place like this. Very peculiar custom. Just because the people like it. Well, the following day, off on a walk, which was then to take in a burial cave containing coffins themselves, cut, sewn, from the trunks of trees, opened, then used, and sealed with the aid of large wooden pins. They were, and are, then stacked along the wall of a large cave, some in quite apparently inaccessible parts of this dark and secretive place, quite a bit off the beaten track. Of greater interest in terms of peculiarity were the hanging coffins belonging to the animists. between pillars of natural rock formed through natural erosion, etc., are suspended, or certainly more like jammed, between, to say, two pillars, a coffin or casket, which is in turn repeatedly used for the dead. But the custom prompts more questions than a guide can handle. Another point to be followed through later on. Then onwards into a situation where everybody is in fact thinking the same, but everybody is also simultaneously afraid to come. The Sagada caves are deep, the descent slippery, steep, and quite impressive in reverse. Did I really come down this way? The crazy structure formation to the caves is impressive as it is puzzling. But down and down you climb into the bowels of the earth before inaccessibility forces us to reverse the process. Eventually we emerge to daylight. The question, of course, on the lips of everyone was what would have happened in an earthquake? Stuck down there for a month? Not appealing at all. The previous evening on the World Service I had listened to a report on miners trapped on a South African mine. And these people knew that they were down there. Would anybody have known about us? Whilst I had been in Baguio, the very helpful tourist office there had said that a certain place further north, in the heart of the mountain province, called Labuagan, or Lubagan, 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 or take two, Lubagan, was holding its first ever tourist fair. Well, why not go there? So in the early hours of Saturday morning, headed off. The road, dusty, apparently a testing ground for shuttle tourists, via the town of Bontoc and some of the fantastic rice terraces, which climb the mountains up to a height of 1,500 meters. In total, the rice terraces can only be appreciated by actually seeing them, but end to end, they represent some 26,000-28,000 kilometers of rice terraces, dating back for nearly 2,000 years. But via Bontoc, we continued a pattern so typical and so repeatedly singular in terms of each twist and tangled turn, so beautiful. Words themselves, or let alone photographs, can do little to convey the beauty of that passing scenery that day. Undeveloped, primitive, wild, just completely different. And it wasn't raining, so you could actually see the thing. This is a land that time certainly did forget. Various groups have, until 1993, looked for independence for this region. Just firstly, they fought against Marcos, and subsequently against the present government. There is a group here fighting against the government. There's a group of right-wing guys fighting down further south. And then the island of Mindanao, South, mainly Muslim country, or is the Moro National Liberation Front. So all in all, three different groups are still fighting the government, although in 93 they're meant to have laid down their arms, but they are still around. But the people here are different in terms of language, facial features, which are themselves sharper than those further south in the zone. Arriving eventually, we found that besides being amongst the first two tourists, I hadn't built another sucker on this adventure. Besides being the first two tourists to the first ever festival, it was in fact over. A 3-day festival was completed on day one, and we had arrived halfway through day two. This was a bit of a letdown. Apparently, we had missed the Minister of Tourism, the Governor of the province, and three international journalists. So if you come across any crazy articles written about this part of the world saying that no tourists pitched up, please take note. I was there first. Anyway, lived on that morning, and the scenic view from the place were quite spectacular. The village itself, completely jam-packed with children, testimony to the lack of any plans for birth control, a growing problem in the Philippines, where population grows by about a million per annum, which is really sort of messing up the country, because the country in general is being rapidly left behind by the other Asian tigers. Everybody talks about getting their act together on economic progress and economic development, but nobody actually ever goes out and does anything about it. Great plans, no action. Anyway, the evening was spent in a very simple and enjoyable meal. But lunchtime it was in fact a bit different, because when we arrived at the small lodging house, they said, "What would you like for lunch?" And I said, "Well, I'm going for the simple thing, a bit of chicken and rice." "Well, you don't have any chicken at the moment." "Okay," and I was shown into the shop in the lodging house. The shop was downstairs. And there before me in the shop was arranged a camp, which I was asked to select my lunch, which was then subsequently mixed up with a bit of rice. Lunch was a disaster. Evening meal was brilliant in terms of the freshness of ingredients. But anyway, most of the inhabitants at that point in time were an open-air movie, part of this local social occasion. Most of the movies in Philippines are diabolical standard, but they are extremely popular. And the cost of going to the movie is next to nothing, so very popular. Although international movies do come through as well. Schindler's List, the Oscar-winning movie, yes, that was a source of local controversy as well, because they tried to censor it. Then Spielberg was ruined. Then the president gets involved in the country. The president gets involved in everything in this country. Anyway, I'm about to say, well, Still there. Sunday the 27th. Nearly the end of February. A typically early morning departure in a northeasterly direction. Sounds like we're at sea. I think I was at the time. In a very general direction. The trip reintroduced new meaning to the word dust. As we progressed out of town, out of the village, along these dusty roads. Firstly, we got bogged down once, and everybody had to get out of the vehicle and help remove the vehicle from the mud. Having overcome that minor little problem, we sat back then to watch a level of dust build up over everybody in the my luggage, dark navy color, which I thought would conceal most dust, became brown eventually. Seems that we left the mountains very quickly. See, dramatic things happen. First of all, we're surrounded by mountains. The next minute, all the mountains are gone. But that was the way it was. And then out, flat, flat, level countryside. Cattle grazing. Very unusual to see cattle grazing. I mean, there's an array of general absence of milk in this part of the world as well. Heading off and eventually arriving in the town of Tokugero. Tokugero, yes. This is in northeastern Luzon. That has been one of the main islands from the Philippines, if you didn't gather by now. But anyway, this is where I was. This place and the next two stops along the coast were, by all standards, a non-event. It was certainly worth the experience to get to this part of the world, as you've seen for yourself. The scenery is quite beautiful, but not as beautiful as what I had already seen. So, Tokugero, here we were. Yeah, the choking street fumes from the passing from the jeepneys and the tricycles. Few private vehicles at all. Curious stairs. People address you, "Hi Joe, hi Americano, where you go?" Which the best way to answer, I discovered, was "Hi Joe, hi Americano," thereby insulting the Philippine nation. "I go to Moscow." That really got sort of me out of the mail most of my interrogation processes. The nighttime activity, folk bands of poorish quality, surprisingly poorish quality in comparison with that available down south, particularly in Manila. The towns offer little of historical interest. Even the Marcus Museum in Laog on the northwestern side of the town, his hometown, is shut, run down, and extremely drab in appearance. It was opened about 2 years ago. This really was, between Tocogero, Laog, and San Fernando, Layuni, an oddball collection of disappointing towns of little significance, interspersed by long drives through pleasant, but not outstanding scenery, and certainly no sparkling beaches to entertain anybody. It is a part of the world that the modern tourist does not really get to see. Anyway, that concludes this side of the tape, officially. So I don't know where I'm going after. It's still working. Didn't trust me to say when I said it was the end of it.